welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 27, 2021. Most employees of the Catholic Diocese of Rumbek have been detained following the shooting of Bishop-elect.
We have arrested 20 people currently under our custody, including some of our police personnel who have been assigned there.
And the South Sudan pounds is gaining grounds against the US dollar in markets across South Sudan.
When we go to the market, you realize the dollar change has really dropped. But when we buy items like food items, you realize that the prices are really not dropping. They are still high.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Lake State Police spokesperson Captain Elijah Mabor Makwach says security operatives, including the police and the National Security Service, have detained about 20 people in connection with the shooting of Bishop-elect Reverend Father Christian Klasari. Makwach says most employees of the Catholic Diocese of Rumbek have been detained and will be questioned about the identity of the attackers involved in the shooting of Bishop-elect on Sunday. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor reports from Rumbek Town.
Police say they have detained all employees, including watchmen, at the offices of the Catholic Diocese of Rumbek. Captain Elijah Mabor Makwach is the Lake State Police spokesperson.
We have arrested 20 people currently under our custody, including some of our police personnel who have been assigned there, including priests and the staff of the diocese who were there around the crime scenes. Mm-hmm. Up to now, we are investigating the crime. We shall establish the motive very soon.
Makwach is appealing to the public, especially social media users, to avoid spreading misinformation about the incident. He warned the officers will arrest anyone who they determine is publishing unsourced inaccurate information. Makwach urges the public to stay calm and allow the government investigate the attack.
I would like to advise people that you cannot just go pick something somewhere there and then you take it. The wild rumors who are being circulated on social media, this is a criminal case and it is a typical police concern. Police is the one to take charge of this, not anybody. So whoever is circulating the information that he knows, that he put on social media, I don't know where do he got that one. Because we are investigating and all the papers are with us.
William Koji Kirjok, acting information minister in Lagos State, says the governor has formed a committee to oversee the investigation.
Honorable Governor for Lagos State, Makur Kulangle, yesterday also has formed a committee headed by the Minister for Cabinet Affairs, deputized by the Commissioner for Central Rumbek County and the members of the security, including member of the National Security are in the committee. Their task is to make sure the investigation is carried forward on why the attack has been made on the bishop and the residents of the church. 25 people are in prisons. These are the suspects among them.
Kirjok advised people to learn any new developments about the case from journalists, not social media.
It is the journalists that sometimes reach the scenes. It is the journalists that reach the stakeholders. They get the right information. They are the ones to public such information. Everybody these days, involved themselves in spreading messages.
The situation remains tense in Rumbek, where there is a heavy deployment of security forces in the parts of the town, especially near the offices of the Catholic Diocese of Rumbek. William Sande Mabor for VOA News, Rumbek, Lagos State.
Authorities in Jonglei State say at least 2 people were killed and 2 children abducted on Monday by armed men suspected to be from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area. The Jonglei State Police Commissioner confirms the incident, but says the police did not intervene on time due to what he calls logistical challenges. The coordinator of the Greater Pibor Administrative Area says there is little evidence to indicate Monday's attackers were carried by people from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Eyewitness Nyamoth Yaker says while her family was traveling from Uror to Bor, their vehicle fell into an ambush between Gadiang and Mathiang on Monday morning. Yaker says the attackers stopped their vehicle at gunpoint, then opened fire, killing her husband Galuanyel and one another person. Yaker says the attackers looted the passenger's belongings and abducted her 6-year-old son and 2-year-old daughter.
Our vehicle was attacked and the attackers have abducted my children and killed my husband and another man. What I want the government to do is to help in tracing these children for me. If they can manage to bring my children back, at least I will feel better. But now, I don't know what to do.
Jonglei State Police Commissioner Major General Joseph Mayana Kon confirms the incident, but says the police did not intervene in time due to what he calls logistical challenges.
We were just surprised this morning about the incident, which took place early in the morning around 1 o'clock between Gadiang and Mathiang. The car was coming from Urol. And then on the way, so suddenly he fall into the ambush of some criminals. So they climb the car and then they went in. And suddenly they shot these people, two people. They have killed two people.
General Akon says there have been a series of deadly road ambushes on the Gadiang Highway over the last few weeks. He says no arrests have been made. General Akon says people should travel with an escort.
They have to inform the police or the army so that a force is organized on their cars to protect these people who are moving. So movement alone, we don't want people to move. To move alone, they should ask for another for escort. But we are ready with the police. We have a force that can make escort. But we don't have ammunition. This is our problem.
Last week, Nyawich Lem Makwey, the wife of former National Health Minister Riegai Cook, and Ajang Malwal Ajang were killed while traveling from Bor to Uror County. Simon Manyok Ding, the advisor on human rights to Jonglei State Governor Dinei Jok Chogor, accuses armed youth from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area of carrying out the road attacks. Ding says the ambushes have wreaked havoc on local communities, which he warns could jeopardize the peace process between Jonglei and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area.
This news is very shocked because our side here, we're struggling to collect these children and then to report them to where they belong. And that side of the Bibor administration area, even they did the same. They collect children from Bor, Twitch, and Wuror or Nuer areas. But now with this new development of attack. Presently, I think this is four attacks, the same road, the same location.
Peter Ajag, the coordinator for the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, says there is no proof that either last week's deadly road attack in Jonglei State or the most recent one involves youth from his area.
I heard just information about the accident which has been take place last week ago. The woman has been killed. And people, they are start accuse the Murle, use of Murle without the evidence. But I don't know if there is another accident happen after this. This is what I don't know. But that one, the first one, we cannot even to tell you the detail because the bush, it contains many criminals, and you don't know whether they are Murle, they are Dinka, they are Nuer. We don't know.
In January, the Low Nuer and Dinka Bor communities of Jonglei State and the Murle community of Greater Pibor Administrative Area held a peace conference in Juba, where they agreed to bury their differences and embrace peace. At the end of the conference, leaders from the three communities signed a document stating that all abductees shall be returned and the perpetrators shall be punished. It also said compensation shall be paid to the families of those killed or injured during attacks and revenge attacks, including cattle raids. Community leaders from both areas have exchanged some of the abductees in recent weeks. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
Some traders and consumers across South Sudan say the South Sudanese pounds has gained against the US dollar, but prices of food items remain high. The traders say they are charging high prices due to heavy taxes and transportation costs. For VOA News, Daniel Friday Martin reports from Yei.
A week ago, one US dollar exchanged for 640 South Sudanese pounds. Today, a dollar exchanges for 450 South Sudanese pounds on the black market. Yei Town resident Irene Tomalu says, although the pound has gained value against the US dollar, prices of essential commodities including food remain high.
When we go to the market, you realize the dollar change has really dropped, but when we buy items like food items, you realize that the prices are really not dropping. They are still high, so there should be lower in the prices in order for the commoners like us who cannot afford that dollar rate in order for us to buy food items cheaply.
Edward Luba, a retail sale trader in Yei Town, says despite a drop in the high exchange rate, high and illegal taxes is forcing many traders to hike prices in the market.
Transport and taxation costs are so high. We buy goods from Juba, but on the way to Yei, traders are taxed multiple times by the national, state, county revenue collectors and other people collect taxes without valid receipts, and if these taxes are wiped out, prices of goods will drop in the markets.
Luba says overall, the appreciation of the local currency against the US dollar is good news to traders like him. Earlier this month, Bank of South Sudan Governor Dier Tong said the government would auction millions of dollars to the commercial banks on a weekly basis in a bid to normalize market prices and the foreign exchange rates in the country. This after the International Monetary Fund lent South Sudan $174 million to improve and stabilize the country's economy. Gladys Reja, an economics lecturer at the University of Juba, says injecting more hard currency into the market will not address the short and long-term economic challenges facing the country.
The monetary intervention now, it is temporary because we only got $174 million from IMF. And that's not sustainable unless maybe we need to focus on the diversification of our economy, like investing in the agriculture sector so that we're able to export some of the agricultural products. Once we have this agreement implemented gradually, you know, we will have the foreign investors, we will have the domestic investors, you know, and all these factors combined together will improve our economy in the long run.
Ahmed Morgan, another University of Juba economics lecturer, says although the government is working towards improving security and the proper management of the non-oil revenues, widespread corruption will continue to weaken the country's economy.
Corruption is also another factor that derails our economic system. South Sudan, as the transparency measure already put, is almost number one in terms of corruption. So if you don't fight this corruption, whatever economic policies that you make will not work. So we need to fight corruption. This can help improve the economy both in the medium and long run. Until when we try to use the oil money well, we will still continue to have this kind of shocks and fluctuations in the market. A country needs to use the resources, which are especially natural resources, in order to build it into wealth.
Both Reja and Morgan advised government officials to focus on restoring peace and stability across the country and to diversify the economy in order to address South Sudan's major economic challenges. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin in Yei Town.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, India is calling for help to combat COVID-19 outbreaks. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is most special about you?
I don't like disappointing people because of my actions. The way it pained me when somebody has disappointed me, I think about the same pain that I will cause to someone whom I have disappointed.
I'm someone who is very friendly, and I can interact with different people without considering their conditions and their status.
One thing special about me, I love the way God has created me, and I love being myself. I don't need to disguise myself like somebody, or I don't need to put myself pretend like someone. I appreciate the way God has created me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we take a look at the fight against the coronavirus in India. India's coronavirus cases hit a record for a fifth day on Monday, as countries including Britain, Germany, and the United States pledged to send urgent medical aid to help tackle the crisis. Flora Bradley-Watson of Reuters reports.
The international community is stepping in to help India as it battles a devastating second wave of COVID-19. The US, Britain, France, and Germany have all announced they will be sending medical supplies to the country. As cases surge, breaking new records on Monday, hospitals across India are running out of medical oxygen and beds. Patients are dying for want of treatment while they queue outside hospitals waiting to be seen. Britain's Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab.
We're sending out an emergency shipment of over 600 items of equipment. They're ventilators, oxygen concentrators, and the aim is to provide the support that the Indians need at their hour of need, really, if judging by the distressing scenes we've seen in many of the hospitals in India.
The US is sending raw materials to help India manufacture the Covishield vaccine, along with medical equipment and protective gear to help India respond to what has been billed a COVID tsunami. There have also been calls for the US to send its AstraZeneca vaccines that have not been approved for use domestically. President Joe Biden said on Twitter, quote, "Just as India sent assistance to the United States as our hospitals were strained early in the pandemic, we are determined to help India in its time of need." Germany and France have also pledged to send oxygen and medical supplies, and the European Commission said it would respond to an appeal from Delhi for help. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi said on Sunday a, quote, "storm of infections had shaken his country." He himself is facing criticism for failing to prepare health systems for this latest wave and allowing for big religious and political gatherings to take place. The capital Delhi extended its lockdown on Monday to try to arrest the surge. There are concerns that new variants of the virus emerging in India could undermine progress made elsewhere in fighting the pandemic.
Still on COVID-19, a top European Union official says that Americans who have been vaccinated against COVID-19 should be able to travel to Europe by summer, easing existing travel restrictions. Brian Woods of Reuters reports.
The European Union plans to open its doors to Americans who have been vaccinated by this summer. That's according to European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen on Sunday. She told the New York Times, quote, "The union's 27 members would accept unconditionally all those who are vaccinated with vaccines that are approved by the European Medicines Agency." Von der Leyen did not say when exactly travel could resume, but mentioned the agency has approved all three vaccines used in the U.S. It's been over a year since the EU largely shut down non-essential travel. Earlier this month, the EU agreed to launch vaccination travel passes to make travel easier for people who have been vaccinated, recovered from infection, or tested negative. Also on Sunday, the EU's vaccine task force chief said they are confident they will be able to produce enough vaccines to achieve its target for immunity of its adult population by the middle of July.
Several African countries continue to battle the impact of preventable disease that claim thousands of lives. In sub-Saharan Africa alone, malaria has claimed an estimated 380,000 lives in 2018. That's according to the World Health Organization. But there are some signs of hope in Somalia. For VOA News, Mohammed Kahir reports from Mogadishu.
This year's theme was reaching zero malaria target as World Health Organization celebrated the achievement of those countries that are on verge of eliminating the disease. While Somalia is still not free from malaria, the country's authorities say there is some progress in the past 3 years in decreasing the number of deaths from the disease. That is welcome news for Horn of African nation struggling to cap other challenges, including drought and lack of security. Dr. Ali Abdul Rahman is the manager of Somalia's National Malaria Control Department. He points out deaths from malaria has declined from 31 in 2018, 22 in 2019, to 5 last year.
There was a lot of interventions we have done, including a distribution of LNIL, long-last insecticide nets, to the target population, especially IDBs and vulnerable people. And IRS, indoor residual spray, were done in the riverine areas. And also, the case management was going on every health facility in the country.
Somalia has weak healthcare system and is poorly resourced, according to World Health Organization. Due to decades of insecurity and conflict, the country's institutions struggle to provide access to malaria prevention and treatment to those at risk of contracting the disease, including pregnant women and children. Falastin Mohamed Abukar is a mother of three children who lives in an internally displaced camp in Mogadishu. Last year, she paid $40 to get a medicine from a local pharmacy, where she was referred when she tested positive for malaria and typhoid. She says she was very weak in bed, and when she visited the nearest health center, the healthcare provider said they do not have the medicine. They then referred her to get it from private pharmacies and pay out of pocket. Dr. Jamal Amran from country's World Health Organization office says, who is working with Somali authorities to improve access to malaria medication.
This year, we will start to do a rapid assessment needs for the IDPs and other neglected groups like nomads. What's the factors which is preventing them to utilize the health spaces properly? And based on all findings, we will, along with other partners, we will develop a specific strategy for health services for these minorities. And, of course, with the involvement of civil society and community also workers, especially now with COVID.
Hailed as possible breakthrough, a new malaria vaccine has shown to be 77% effective in early trials to combat the disease. And once announced for use, countries like Somalia could benefit in continuing their fight against malaria and meet the malaria-free goal. Mohamed Kahir for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
From Somalia, we move to Sudan, where some women activists in Al Janina town of Sudan's West Darfur state say there is a rise in the number of reported cases of gender-based violence against women and girls following recent tribal conflict that displaced more than 40,000 people. Sumaya Musa, a field officer with the local non-profit known as SIHA, says her office has recorded dozens of rape cases, sexual harassment and domestic violence against women and girls at different assembling points. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The UN Humanitarian Agency says about 65,000 people, mostly women and children, were displaced after violence erupted in West Darfur in early April. The UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says today that a recent mission to Al Janina found that a top needs of the newly displaced include food, water, shelter, and protection, including support for survivors of gender-based violence. Protection is one of the key concerns of the new internally displaced persons who are in 13 gathering sites. More than 40% of those assessed reported gender-based violence, and 60% said they don't feel there is enough security in and around the gathering sites. Sumaya Musa, a field officer with the NGO Strategic Initiative for Women, tells South Sudan in Focus via messaging application from Al Janina town that she documented dozens of cases of violence against women and girls, including rape.
There are reports of domestic fighting and women and girls are beaten up. Some of them are reported to have been raped, and some of these incidents are mostly covered up for fear of stigma, to the extent that activists working in camps are unable to trace and find out the exact figure of such incidents, because some of the victims keep on moving from one camp to another to avoid being stigmatized.
Earlier this month, more than 200 people were killed and over 250 others were injured during intercommunal clashes between local Masalid and Arabs in Al Janina town. Musa says hundreds of women and girls are unable to access dignity kits, antenatal care and other health services due to limitation of health facilities. She calls the situation horrible.
Unfortunately, the health services for pregnant women are not enough. Government health institutions are not functioning, and most of the NGOs are focusing on giving food rations. So currently, there is no provision of health care to pregnant women.
Musa says her office also recorded more than 10 cases of pregnancy complications in different sites in Al Janina, some of which are due to the psychological trauma of displacement. She says health aid agencies need to respond quickly to help displaced women.
There are health complications that women here go through, and due to fear, terror, and displacement, some have gone through miscarriage. Even in the previous incident of Chirandintu and Abu Zar, many families lost their property and children as well.
Based on UN OCHA's latest update on humanitarian situation in Al Janina, at least 14 of the 27 health facilities are now operational. More than 10,000 dignity kits were procured and delivered to the town, and 6 tents were erected as temporary shelters for women and girls who experience sexual violence. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
That's our show for this Tuesday. Let us know what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We will air your comments every Friday. We now leave you with the song Shane by a Sudanese artist. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. حجر شاشة شان نقع خراب ما فيه شجر يوي السلام وطاف حجر حصاصة يولع في الرمضة حصاصة يولع في الرمضة سلطان مسلطنا فيه لغير مرة تنشى شير نشي مرسية في شير شير نشي في المدمى في شير
في الزمن